Okay, we'll begin the meeting now, and we have two bills, most of which is almost identical. So what we're going to do instead of the other way is to do an informational hearing on the two of them at once so that we get all of that taken care of, people understand it. Then we'll move to the formal part later about moving the bills and things like that. So would both Representative Paz and Representative Hamer go up there, and it looks like you got the same witnesses, the same bill, except Representative Hamer has a little one paragraph extra. Could you both go up there, and I think we'll let, since Representative Paz had the first one, let him explain the general idea of it. For members, the bills, both authors have amendments, and we normally adopt the author's amendments to put them in the proper. So let's just, for discussion purposes, work off the amendments that the Representative Haas has a delete all, so his entire bill will be in the amendment when we move that. Representative Paymar has a new amendment to his, which I believe is the exact same language as the entire Haas bill with the amendment, except he keeps in his appropriation. And by the way, these do have to both go to Representative Pawlowski's committee from here. So eventually the motion will be to do that. Representative Haas, would you like to start out to explaining the bill, and then
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly will explain. You would wish me to explain my amendment, or you wish me to...
Why don't you explain the background first, in case some of the members here are not on the Finance Division, so may not have heard of the problem that exists.
Well, thank you very much for the explanation, and I was going to say that you were wrong, that we do have two separate bills, but if my bill now has gone over there and is an amendment, then we have bills that are very close. But I'm happy with whatever form this goes in. Let me explain. Should I give you a little background on this?
One second. You said that...
Well, if
do you have this in your opinion?
Is there a difference in the...
Mr. Chair, I think there must be a mistake. I don't have the task force language in my bill, and my bill I don't have an amendment for.
Oh, you don't?
It's just as is. I don't know what happened.
So 684 is still...
It's the way it is.
The way it is? The way it is.
Somebody... I'm sorry, Representative Paymar. I got an amendment that I thought it was yours to your bill.
I agree with everything, Representative Paz.
And I agree with everything.
And if you have a stapler, we can put these together, you know.
Okay. We have an amendment to... Representative Paymar, your bill is 684, correct?
Yes, it is.
And we have an amendment that says move to amend 684 and put the same language. So Representative Haas has this amendment to your bill?
I have an amendment here. Is this the number? I'm sorry, I'm so green here, I don't know the how to tell you what amendment this is. How do I do that?
That's the amendment number, yes.
All right, let me help you with the amendment number now. It's been pointed out to me, I can read. HO 492DE1.
Okay, why don't we just let Representative Haas explain his first, and then, since he apparently is trying to amend your bill also. We can deal with that later, so go ahead, Representative Haas.
I'm sorry if my paperwork is something that caused the problem, but I've had a couple mistakes already today, so that just adds to the bunch, so it doesn't, my apologies if that's what it was. The base problem of both these bills that you're going to listen to is probably was magnified when a few years ago the state was having money problems and some crowded problems, and they moved the short-term felon to the county jail. And I think there was an honest attempt to be paying a portion of that, but that money pretty well stayed stable. So right now they're paying about 20 cents on the dollar. They're paying probably $10 of a $55 to $60 fee. plus some of the fringe benefits are not there as well. So we really felt pursued that our budgets in the county were really rippling because of this type of unfunded mandate and this shift. Matter of fact, I tagged the name of this in the study of the three S's. That was shift, shaft, and spin. Because once the state budget was balanced, this really throws other budgets out of balance. So I had a bill here that I deleted that really asked for an awful lot. The only thing it didn't ask for was an apology for doing this to the local taxpayers. And I thought that could have been an oral amendment, but I figured I'd just leave it off. When recognizing it was being followed by a bill that was going to ask for dollars, replacement dollars and reimbursement dollars in my bill, I had a study that would say, you know, even if the state paid the amount of dollars necessary for this program, it is not a good program. It's not being complained about by the state because they're paying 20 cents on the dollar. If I was buying a product 20 cents on the dollar, I probably wouldn't look the horse in the mouth either. But as you raise this up, then things are going to be magnified of what's wrong with it. What's wrong with this program? One, the state is booking into a county that they haven't met the prisoner yet. The county may be shifting it because their county jail is full. It may take 6 months to find out where this person's been placed at. Do you think that all counties are doing good squared-away programs with these short-term felons for $10 a day? You think they're receiving the programs, the probationary programs, the analysis, the drug, the alcohol programs that they need to stay out of jail when they are released? You think that's happening? At $10 a day in all 87 counties with the state not meeting these prisoners? I don't think so. So what I did was highlight a task force. Now normally task force, if you're in control of everything, you probably wouldn't need a task force. But this is a team that is really separated out. You have in this team, you have probation officers, you have sheriffs, you have Department of Corrections, you have public defenders, and you have them from all around the state. They are going to sit down at the table and they're going to discuss effectiveness, identify gaps, reentry, reimbursement. They're going to do it over a short period of time. They're going to do it with people that know the history of this. If you go back far enough, this short-term felon was found in the county jail, paid for by the counties. It's not a quid pro quo, however. They're going to end this study on January 15th, 2009, and then they're going to give us some answers or what they think is the best answers on management, on reforming, on reimbursement, on housing of the short-term felons, and on proposals they have previously asked for in past history that were not granted, that were good ideas in past history and are still good ideas. So I think we have two bills you're going to look at. One is a best practice bill, and one is a relieve the counties of a few of the dollars. The governor has proposed it in his budget. The next bill you'll have will propose it also at a little higher rate, I think. Do you have questions on this amendment?
No, I don't see any. Then maybe we can Representative Paymar explain how yours is different.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Well, my bill, House File 684, basically appropriates $6,458,000 in each year of the next biennium, to the Commissioner of Corrections to reimburse counties for housing short-term felons committed to the custody of the Commissioner. And, you know, as Representative Haas said, this attempts to financially deal with the problem that was created during the budget crisis of 2003. And so this, the monies here includes the monies that the governor has recommended in his base budget to rectify part of the problem. And this basically says that if you're going to house short-term offenders, you should pay, the state should pay for it. Now, we can argue the policy, and probably should, about, as Deputy Commissioner Benson said, whether we need some regional jails to house short-term offenders. I think that's probably a good idea, but it seems to me that if we're going to do it, that the state ought to pay for it. So my bill makes the counties whole in future years to house short-term offenders, and I have several witnesses, Mr. Chair, but that's my bill.
Representative, both Hamer and Haas, you have the same witnesses, it looks like, one extra for Hamer. Why don't we take those at this time, and then we can get into the actual bills.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I
think I may have... Should we all have the same witnesses? There's someone from Ramsey County.
There's three that are the same, and then you have a Stearns County sheriff.
I believe the Stearns County sheriff is not here, but there is a sheriff here.
Oh, okay. Oh, the head of the association's here. Let's see. You're not Jan Parker, I take it.
Hi, I'm Sheriff Steve Borkhardt, Olmsted County, and representing the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. The Minnesota Sheriff's Association is supportive of these bills that get the number up closer to $55 a day, ideally all the way to $55 a day. This was started 4 years ago in Olmsted County. It was estimated that we would have 7 or 8 STOs on a daily basis. In fact, we averaged closer to 12. At present, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 per day. The first year, I think we got $13 and change in per diem. And the last year, we've been around $9. Ultimately, this has been an average cost to Olmsted County of nearly $500,000 a year of cost that was not ours prior to the beginning of this program. $500,000 a year would support an additional 4, almost 5 patrol deputies along with a squad car. So it has been a considerable hit on my budget and a considerable hit to the property tax levy in Olmsted County. So we, as an association, every sheriff has had a similar story to tell. They're proportionately different for the size of their counties, but every sheriff has the same story to tell. So we support these bills that will get the per diem up closer to what the real cost of incarcerating someone is.
Thank you. Are you Ms. Commissioner Parker, I guess it is?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm Jan Parker, Ramsey County Commissioner. Thank you so much for inviting me here today to testify on this bill, which we feel is extremely important to Ramsey County and to all the counties in the state. As Representative Paymar indicated, in 2003, the state was under a very, very severe budget shortfall. And this change in policy was enacted based on some recommendations that the state could save some money by sending the bills for their offenders to the counties. And there was also a recommendation that they would that the state would save money even if they paid the county rates, the per diems. Somehow the two issues got separated and the policy went through, but no money went with it, or at least not enough money went with it. And so I really appreciate your taking this up and examining this. Ramsey County has spent almost $5 million on this problem since the bill was enacted in the last couple of years. This money has gone directly to our property taxes. There is absolutely no other recourse that we have for generating revenue, and so this was a direct increase to the property taxes. Our cost per day is $95 a day. We've been getting, I've heard $9 to $12 per diem from the state, and so we have to make up that difference. As far as the number of offenders, we average 61 offenders per day, and we're anticipating in 2007 that that will involve 22,000 offender bed days. Okay, so if you do the math and subtract the 12 from the 95, that's where our problem is. We, in addition to the financial issue, it also creates problems for us in that we're really not set up to deal with this type of an offender. The county workhouse, which is where we house these folks, are not set up to handle the prisoners, and they have had problems with them having way more disciplinary action than our typical offender. We've had to do more repairs for the facilities, like windows getting broken and, you know, a variety of issues for the types of state offenders that have been sent to us. We are licensed, or we have a rated capacity of 316 inmates a day at our correctional facility, and with the ability of an additional 48 if we use some space that we use for our training. But we've had to use all of that space, and so it also has an impact on the programming that we're able to do with the offenders. We really don't have room for these, and yet there's no way that we can say no. They just come. So we have a dilemma that we're getting these inmates that we have not asked for. We're not getting paid for them. The federal government has suggested that they would like to rent some space from us, and they would be willing to spend $85 to $90 per inmate. And so I really appreciate your willingness to reconsider this action that was taken in 2003.
Commissioner Parker, I have one question, and I don't know what the technical term is. Some people have called it the differential rate. I assume the $95 is your cost out for each prisoner that you have. But since you built the facilities and there's a certain savings when you have open beds, what would that extra cost be? I know that's less than that to house them.
Mr. Chair, I am not sure about the answer to that. We have Mr. Chris Crutchfield, and Ken, do you know the answer to that? Chris Crutchfield is the Deputy Director of our Corrections Department.
Mr. Crutchfield, welcome back to the committee that you used to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last week we were here talking about actually per diems for offenders that in times of low occupancy. And when we're talking about one or two offenders, that's a lot different than when you're talking about 48 or 50 offenders. What that does is that affects our fixed costs. Then that affects our staffing. In times of low occupancy, which we have not had for several years, that would be a much lower cost. But because there are so many short-term offenders that are coming into the facility, it's affecting the fixed costs that we have as far as staffing and food and those sort of things.
One other question. At the 95, does that include the cost for amortizing the construction or whatever you would call it?
Mr. Chair, thank you. We are actually having to build a new facility because we've run out of room, which is a decision that we may not have made had we not had to take these short-term offenders every day. We do amortize the building that we've had since the 50s, but we are not amortizing the new construction that we're getting ready to break ground on.
Thank you. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Crutchfield, thank you for coming down. I think my question is probably better answered by you than Commissioner Parker. I guess I was surprised to hear Commissioner Parker talk about a per diem of $95. To me, that sounds high, and I don't think we talked about this specifically last week when you were here. If we did, I apologize. But it seems high. I think that I've heard numbers in the $50 to $60 range for jail facilities and something in the mid-80s for state prisons. And so I'm just, can you tell me why it's so darn expensive to house somebody in Ramsey County?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Crutchfield,
that is an excellent question. Our per diems went up from, they were $89 last year, and our projected is $95. I can get you a specific breakdown. I can email that to you. It does not include, like I said, it doesn't include the new construction. I do know when we looked into it, 75% of it is staff costs, and we believe that it might just be that in the cities, we know that Hennepin County has a similar per diem rate for their workhouse. I believe it's over $100, but I don't know if someone from Hennepin County can address that, but it might be the difference in salaries and wages in the Twin Cities versus in greater Minnesota.
Mr. Crutchfield, could you send that to all committee members when you send it to Representative Coles?
Absolutely. I can. If it's all right with you, I can send it to your committee administrator, Mr. Baldwin, and then he can distribute it.
Okay. And, Sheriff, did you have an answer to...
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to crack at that question also. I think I can maybe shed a little more light on this question of per diems, Representative Coles. This has been something the Sheriff's Association is trying to nail down for some time, but it's a moving target because not everybody includes the same components of direct and indirect overhead. For example, in my county, if I figure in all of the indirect overhead of debt service and the additional costs I've incurred from a remodeling project and building a work release annex, my per day per diem inflates all the way to $105 a day. And when you consider all medical, all heat, all lights, all everything, as though you were running a business. If you get a number that's much less than that in a county that is in a brand new building, then they are leaving out some components. In general, we all have to conform to Chapter 2911 relative to staff to inmate ratios. We all are paying about the same amount per meal. We are all paying at about the same level for staff proportionate to the compensation rate that's prevalent in that region of the state. So unless a given sheriff is making some real mistakes with scheduling people so they're incurring a lot of overtime, or unless they haven't negotiated aggressively on their meals, you're going to find all of the per diem costs within the same $10 a day bracket across the state, unless somebody is just not including some significant component of direct or indirect overhead.
Well, and Representative Felstrom brought that out with regard to the state when Commissioner Benson was testifying. I'm not sure if you were there, Representative Coles.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess, I mean, that raises a very interesting point because I think, as Sheriff Borchert indicated, the per diem number is a bit of a moving target, and I'll be honest, it's rather frustrating for me to hear one group come in and say our per diem is $100, another group come in and say it's $50 or $60, and the state come in and say we're at 88 or whatever it is. And if we don't have a standard way by which our correctional facilities, whether they're local or whether they're state facilities, are calculating that per diem rate, it's difficult for us as policymakers to evaluate what's working and what's not. And so, while that's, I know we're getting a little bit far afield from the bill, I think it highlights an issue that we maybe ought to consider looking at, and that is how do we determine what the sheriffs ought to include when they're calculating per diem, and what's, so that we can compare apples to apples instead of having Ramsey County here saying it's 95 or 100 if we, or 110 or whatever it is if we amortize. Hennepin County is at whatever, and Carver County is at 70 or whatever my county is at. I don't know. It makes it difficult to make good policy decisions, and I don't know if the legislature historically, maybe staff knows, if there's ever been a study about how we calculate per diem and if there's a way that we could
look at that. It is in statute, Representative Felstrom. Maybe you, I know everybody misses parts of meetings because they're busy, but we went over it quite a bit in Representative Tamer's committee one day, and Representative Felstrom brought that out, that our state isn't following the state statute, apparently, and apparently with agreement, sounded like, of the legislature. So it's hard to get counties to abide by something that they're not controlled by when we aren't ourselves. Is that correct, Mr. Beeble?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I don't recall that discussion. I was probably not in committee when that happened, but I think it's maybe something we ought to look at. I mean, if there's a way we're supposed to be doing it, and it's not being done, I guess I'd like to understand why. And I think I was maybe Representative Wilson's question, and not only from the state, but from from the counties as well. You know, if Sheriff Borchardt's saying that his per diem rate's is the 70s, but if he counts in everything, he's up above $100, and that's probably where everybody is. But we have those same discussions and debates sometimes around other areas of the state budget. I think of education, and, you know, we had the, whatever you think of the 70% solution that was bantied about last year and over the course, it depended on what you counted. Well, we need to figure out what we're going to count and count it consistently so we can compare apples to apples. And so maybe I'll follow up with Mr. Debo offline and see where we're at. And Representative Hillstrom, if you're going to look at this issue, it's something that I may be interested in looking at with you. I appreciate your interest in it.
Mr. Chair.
Sheriff Borchardt.
May I add just a couple of points? The one area that I neglected to mention that could also make a legitimate difference in indirect overhead is some counties haven't built a jail for 50 or 60 years, and they're not going to immediately, and if they're not funding a depreciation schedule, they're not going to show that kind of debt service or bonding in their per diem. Now, another complicating factor that adds a little bit more confusion, I hesitate to bring it up, but it's the fact that at various times when there have been some surplus beds available and individual sheriffs have been looking to lay off some of their indirect overhead by filling beds for anything they can get, they've negotiated price downwards from what their real cost is. So today, the going rate is about $55 a day, but that doesn't really compensate fully. Well, one sheriff buys a bed from another sheriff, they're typically going to pay $50 or $55 a day. But that sheriff's cost is actually more than that. But that's what the market has gone to in the last couple of years, because there have been some chunks of surplus beds that some sheriffs have been trying to realize some revenue from. So back in the 90s, we actually were in a period of time where the beds were not at all in surplus, and $70 to $80 a day was the norm. So it's a kind of a moving target based on when new jails come online and what kind of surplus beds are available.
So would the 55 be more based on what Mr. Crutchfield was talking about, when you have a few open slots and you're not having to add any extra costs to take care of them? Is that what the 55 is more closely related to then?
Mr. Chair and members, I wouldn't hazard that. I would say the 55 was a number everybody could agree on. It's not probably tied to direct expense.
Okay, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Sheriff Borchardt, do you, as association president, have a list of kind of where all the counties are at? Do you have a list that says what each county charges, or does that move so quickly that it would be hard to put down on paper? I'm just curious what kind of a range we're actually talking around the state.
Mr. Chair and Representative,
sure. I can't read your name. It's hiding behind your microphone.
Thank you. No, I do not have a list. I'm not the president of the association. I happen to chair the legislative committee, but I don't think we have an active list right now. It is a moving target. I don't. The floor is pretty much at $55. I did hear a story that one county might be doing business across the border for $45. But right now the floor is about $55. And I don't think anybody's getting much more than that at this point in time, but I don't have a list.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to all or any of the testifiers, not only wasn't I around here in 2003, but I'm not on Representative Paymar's committee, so forgive me if I'm a little behind on this issue, but we seem to be talking about two things here, the money and the policy. These bills are primarily about the money, but underlying it all is the policy. I know it may not be that useful to turn back the clock, but do you object also to the underlying policy? Do you want to see that changed? Is that kind of the end game ultimately? What I'm hearing today is you just want to be paid primarily, but I sense also that you don't want these offenders.
Each of you are looking at the other one.
I have something to say, but I'll wait until they respond.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we would have no objection if you would keep your offenders. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and representatives, in fairness to the DOC, I have to acknowledge this is a top offender group for anybody. This offender group is people who have had their sentences stayed on the condition that they serve some type of probation, go to some kind of treatment, and they have typically violated multiple times. These are not people that have violated one time. And unfortunately, they are down to within their last 6 months when the state has any handle on them whatsoever. Now, one can argue that we shouldn't remove them from their communities where they have access to their rehabilitative programming, psychologists, support systems, families. These typically are not people that are taking advantage of those services. And in fact, these are people the judges are looking to spank one last time for whatever little period of time that they can try to make an impression upon them, which could argue for getting them out of town and sending them back to the State Commissioner of Corrections where they're just going to sit dead time someplace. But they also represent a real management problem for those folks, too, because they have to in-process them, orient them, and by the time that's all done, it's time to discharge them. So none of us particularly likes this population. It's kind of a necessary evil with this group that has not been compliant. In our situation, I think we are as geared up as any county to handle them, although most of them have to sit straight time up until a month or so before they're released if they've been behaving well. Otherwise, they're going to sit straight time until the day they go out the door.
Looks like there's no other questions. Then Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. We recently changed our name, and we consist of 13 of the larger counties in the state of Minnesota. I'll try not and repeat what the previous testifiers have said. I do want to comment first with regards to Senate Representative Paymar's legislation. The amount of money that's appropriated there will provide us approximately $55 a day in per diem if short-term offenders stay at the average number of beds that are being occupied each year at about 300. So it's at the low end of the spectrum. I'll further mention that our costs are not only for renting the beds, we also incur costs for administrative expense in our record keeping and intake of these individuals, just as the Department of Corrections would do. And furthermore, we have, for those counties that don't have the bed space for these individuals, there's significant transport costs related to these individuals. For example, Dakota County, which was one of those counties that do not have sufficient beds within their geography to house these offenders, are now transporting individuals as far as Wilmer to find the beds necessary that this current law creates the dilemma for them. In terms of the actual cost, if you use DOC's average per diem, it's saving them $7.7 million a year over what is appropriated for the current approximately $10 per day that they do pay us.
Representative Hellstrom had a question.
Oh, Mr. Chair, no, I could wait until he's finished.
Oh, can you wait until he's finished?
The question really was going to be, I believe we're already over the $300 mark, and I believe that then the amount that they get per day, per person, declines, and so I'd just like him to address that that's correct and where he thinks we'll be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillary is exact. Hillstrom is correct. Sorry.
That too.
It is at approximately $315, and that $55 does drop when we go over the $300 threshold. I would further like to make it clear, you know, many counties do not have excess beds. The genesis of this legislation wasn't because the counties had surplus beds. and the state had a shortage. Counties have shortages, too, and are struggling to deal with that issue. It's also not a matter that we're not failing to pull our fair share right now. Generally, the population of individuals that you're talking about have probably already seen times in our county jails and are being served by our probation officers. Sheriff Folkart said, basically these individuals are individuals who have reoffended or broken their terms of their probation so frequently that basically jail is no longer a deterrent to them, and the judges in frustration are sending them to prison to complete the amount of what would be their normal sentence under the sentencing guidelines. As has also been mentioned, it's not easy to integrate these people into our facilities. These aren't petty misdemeanors, they aren't misdemeanors, they aren't gross misdemeanors. They're felons, and not only are they felons, they're serious felons. And I'll go into that a little bit further in my concluding comments. For larger facilities, perhaps we have at least the segregation that permits us to deal with them, but in many of our smaller facilities, I basically just have to deal with three clientele, adult females, adult males, and at our juvenile detention facilities, juveniles. We don't have a way to segregate these people from the general population, and that creates extraordinary inmate safety issues for us as well as security issues for us. It's very hard, as Commissioner Parker indicated. I'd just like to conclude then, again, the people that we're dealing with here are serious felons, generally people who have committed crimes against person or various serious robberies. I think a misimpression has been left with the legislature in the past that these are relatively minor offenders. Anybody from murderers down to drug offenders could be a short-term offender, and these are the people we're getting back currently. I'll just conclude then in pointing out the current sentencing guidelines grid that basically defines the pool of what constitutes short-term offenders. There are two graphs here, one of which applies to non-sex offenders, the other sex offenders. Basically, the right-hand side of the graph indicates those individuals who currently should go to prison under sentencing guidelines. But the fact of the matter is, over one-third of those people who are what are called presumptive commits, who should, under the guidelines, go to prison for 1 year or up to life, are not, in fact, doing that, but instead being put on probation, having their sentence stayed, and being put on probation with probably some jail time in the community. And you can see the class of offenders that constitutes this. With that, I'll conclude and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I would just suggest that I think we certainly need to look into the whole issue, not just to the money, but what are we doing? If we can go to the actual bills now, maybe, unless somebody has a question on that. Okay, I think what we'll do is, they can, in the shape that they're in by the authors, they would both fit together. They can be, both be passed, and it looks to me like there's not a conflict if we do that.
Mr. Chair?
We're sitting with, Representative Paymer?
Well, I would I would suggest that, and I'm trying to find my bill here. Since there seemed to have been, I don't know if that taken by a witness or what. House File 684, which I can't seem to find right here. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. In New Hampshire County, we kind of share that.
Gotta watch out for missing all elected officials.
I think there must have been some confusion. There obviously was. So it seems Representative Haas is asking for a task force, as it was. I totally support. So it would seem that his bill would have to go to GovOps, according, I believe, be referred to GovOps. I think mine, since it's just simply a fiscal matter of appropriating money from the general fund to cover the short-term offenders, I think the motion would be that, or I would make the motion that House File 684 pass and be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
Well, Representative Paymar, that's what I said first time, and then I was just said again. So yeah.
It's got to be right there.
But what I was trying to get at was, if anybody on the committee, apparently this is Representative Haas' amendment, and he can't offer it to your bill, and I was wondering if anybody on the committee wanted to do it, or
Representative Haas. I did have a bill. It was 492, and this is the amendment to 492.
Well, Representative Haas, we have an amendment that's to 684, which is identical almost to your delete everything, but it fits in as a new part of Representative Paymar's, and I was told that it was you that had that drafted.
May I orally correct that, and I don't know how how that happened, but my amendment would be to my own bill, and my own bill was 492.
Okay, well that...
And it fits very nicely and was designed for 492, and I don't know how it got the extraneous number, and I wish it didn't, and I wish I could blame somebody else, but it's probably mine.
Okay, then I will move Representative Haas' bill 492, and then I'll move the DE1 amendment so that he can get it in the shape that he wants it, and then we would have to vote on the amendment first. So everybody in favor of voting on the amendment to get it in the shape he wants, say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Okay, it's in the shape you want now. Now, are there any questions or amendments to Representative Haas' bill with the delete everything amendment? Okay, everybody in favor of that, say, and this motion is to pass for passage and re-referral to Government Operations Committee. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It carries. Now, Representative Paymar, you can move your bill.
I would move House File 684 move that it be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this bill or amendments?
Okay.
Representative Holtz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, I tend to agree with what you're trying to do here. My question is, as I read on line 1.14, we talk about the funds being distributed proportionally based on the total number of days. And I guess what I like about your bill compared to the original Haas bill before we amended it is his bill had a floor in it. Your bill has a ceiling in terms of what we're going to pay. But what your bill doesn't address, Representative Paymar, and I hope you'd consider this as it moves forward, is as opposed to distributing the funds proportionally, if there are regional cost differences or other differences that might make some sense that we account for, the cost of housing somebody in Ramsey County may or may not be the same as that cost of housing somebody in Olmsted or up in the northeastern part of the state. So let's think about that as it moves forward to your committee. I tend to agree with what you're doing, and if we can find the money to do this, it's probably something that I'm happy to support. But I'm happy the ceiling's in there. Let's see if we can figure out a way to account for some of those regional cost differences to the extent they exist.
Representative Paymar, there's one correction to your motion. It goes to finance, not to public safety finance. It has to go up and down.
Very well.
It goes to Carlson's committee and then gets sent down to your committee. Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Then Representative Johnson moves the minutes of the February 15th meeting. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? We are adjourned.
All right.